Hello and welcome to Here in LA, Thai Town Edition. Today we talk again with Ben Camacho. Ben recently fought the city attorney and won twice when the city sued to try to get him to return photos the previous city attorney gave him of the LAPD. Then they tried to sue Ben for money for whatever the so-called undercover cops will sue for in the future. The judge said, yeah, no, there's a thing called the First Amendment. Heidi, maybe you've heard of it? Not only that, but then the city agreed to pay Ben's lawyer's fees to the tune of $300,000. So we will talk about all that, his drama with Ground Game LA and their struggle over Knock LA, and we'll also talk about Ben's favorite Thai spot in Thai Town. So let's welcome the undisputed champion of the world, Ben Camacho. Hey everybody, I am here with Ben Camacho. Hey, clap. Hey.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Ben Camacho just beat the city of LA. Hey. I'm going to explain what happened and you can tell me if I'm wrong.
Sure.
Ben Camacho was sued by Heidi. How do you say her name?
Heidi Feldstein Soto.
Heidi Feldstein Soto. No dash.
No dash. I didn't know that a year ago either. Yeah. So,
because the previous city attorney, Mike Fuhrer,
yes,
no dash.
Now under what, investigation or something like that?
Is he really?
Something about the FBI or something? I forget.
Nice.
But yeah.
Because Mike Fuhrer properly handed over 9,000 photos of the LAPD when Ben requested him. And when Heidi got into office as a newbie, she, under the pressure, we assume, of the LA Police Association, sued Ben to get the pictures back, even though the pictures were on the internet and there's no backseat taxis when it's on the, come on, it's the mm-hmm. internet. Mm-hmm. I wish my sex tape could get removed from the internet, but oh well. Just kidding, Mom. So Heidi sued Ben to get him back and then doubly sued for money because the police association said we've got all these quote-unquote undercover cops whose livelihoods and safety is ruined because these pictures are out there and they're going to sue the city, so the city shouldn't have to pay, Ben should have to pay. So those were two lawsuits. Do mm-hmm. I have that correct?
Yeah.
Look at me.
Hey! Good job, Tony.
Okay. So today is Juneteenth. Happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth.
Which is Wednesday. On Monday, you won the first case, which was you didn't have to, you did nothing wrong. In fact, the judge said journalists, there's nothing illegal about a journalist telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. And a quick correction. We didn't settle on Monday. That's just when LA Times wrote the story.
Oh!
We actually settled in May.
You did?
About a month ago, yeah.
So that's why you didn't party last night. You had already won. Did you announce it in May?
No.
Because you had that second suit you had to like be cool about?
It's actually mainly because the council still has to vote on the settlement. So it's technically a tentative a settlement.
So like Staffer B and Paul Krokrian could and Officer Tracy can say like, no, we don't agree with this.
Well, the council members have to essentially approve the settlement.
Does it have to be unanimous or a majority vote?
I have no idea. I'm just,
but they're not gonna, I mean, the court.
Right. Overrule. No, right. And I kind of asked around a little bit and, you know, folks have been saying, you know, they've never really seen an instance where a settlement is.
And the only reason that they're involved is because $300K is going to the lawyers and they have to approve this city funding
exactly,
to go somewhere.
Yes.
That's the only reason they're involved, right?
Yeah. It's taxpayer money. It's our money.
Right. Yeah. Which is good. It's good that the council has to mm-hmm. approve.
Right. Otherwise it'd be a blank check for anything. So,
so in May you knew.
Yes.
Where were we at now? June?
Yes.
So last month you knew.
Yeah.
Did you party last month secretly?
No, but I did have a sense of relief when we got out of mediation. So we went to mediation. So let me back up a little bit.
Go ahead. So, Ben Camacho, tell the story.
Yeah. So we filed our, so if you remember the first case, the clawback censorship case, was set to go to the appellate court, which is a higher court than the superior court. We filed our briefs for that early this, I think Stop LAPD Spine was filed in the winter or the fall last year, and then we filed ours early this year. And that means that the city had to file theirs, their reply to that, essentially, and, you know, get all their arguments ready. And, you know, maybe around March, April, there's some movement within neighborhood councils where they're certain neighborhood councils are passing, what do they call it, community impact statements, I believe, where, you know, it's an official record that gets on that gets filed with the council, and it's a, you know, it's the neighborhood council's stance on a particular issue, and several neighborhood councils were filing these CISs with the council saying, stop this attack on the First Amendment, you know, not verbatim, yeah, just, you know, in support of me. They cited the cases and basically said, you know, this is an attack on the First Amendment. And the last one that happened, I forget, I think it's in the Valley or something, that they filed a CIS, and then a week after, or within the week or something, within 10 days or so, the city reached out to my attorneys and said, hey, we want to settle. We'll pay for a full day of mediation.
It was the pressure of the neighborhood councils, you think?
I think it was a factor, but I think a bigger factor too is that their briefs for the appellate court were due. And I think their team took a look at our arguments and were just kind of like, well, this is crazy. You know, like,
right,
we're not going to win this. Right. So I think, you know, there's a lot of factors at play here. There's the appellate briefs, there's the NCs, there's just the public humiliation of Heidi Feldstein Soto.
Yes.
There's the media, the intense media coalition behind that's supportive of my cases and stuff.
Including the LA Times.
Including the LA Times, including the Associated Press, including so many other groups. So,
well, there's also precedent. You had one in Santa Ana.
Yes.
Right? And there's this crazy thing called the First Amendment.
And the Pentagon Papers.
And
which Heidi cited during her campaign trail in a candidate forum.
Did she really?
Yeah, she said something along the lines of, you know, I know that the media has the power to report on, you know, documents, even if they are illegally obtained. And she cited the Pentagon Papers, which is directly contradicting what she argued in the cases against me.
Wow. Why do you think Heidi did it? Do you think, because here's my theory.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks she has a political future.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, in my opinion,
mm-hmm,
she's the worst city attorney we've ever had. Because at least the previous ones kind of felt like they knew what the hell they were doing. I've never felt like she knows what the hell she's doing. If she was piloting a plane, I would jump out of the plane. I feel like I'd have a safer journey down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I mean,
this is just my two cents.
Sure, go.
And so my belief is she thinks she has a political future.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to booster the odds of her winning any election, she wants to be recommended by the police at some point.
Yeah.
And so that's why she did this crazy thing that she even knew in her heart she was going to lose.
Yeah. I mean, the cognitive dissonance that she must have been experiencing this whole time is probably off the chart. But I mean, I agree with you. It's all political, really. It's, you know, she gets in office, wants to show that she'll go to bat and be the police union's canine. And so there she goes, you know, suing a journalist, right, going against everything that, you know, has already been argued in the Supreme Court.
When Fuhrer went after Lexis,
mm-hmm,
for kind of a similar thing, mm-hmm, in the sense of a journalist doing a journalist's, mm-hmm, job, which, mm-hmm, is reporting on the street.
Yeah.
Do you think that he possibly was doing the same kind of thing? Like, I'm going to appease the police union and be their canine, even though I know that the First Amendment's still a thing?
Yeah, I mean, look, to be honest, I'm not too familiar with, like, what exactly happened, but I think that if we are talking about an elected official, I think that no matter what position they're elected to, we do have to consider that they are a politician.
Right. So they worry about votes,
mm-hmm,
and it seems like all politicians really want the police to support them because it's nice to put on your flyer when you're running for election.
I don't know about nice, but they are rich. So.
Oh, you think money's involved? I'm so naive.
I mean, the police union is one of the most powerful political forces, both here and across the state for all the other police associations. So,
because your average citizen still trusts the police, mm-hmm. and so when the police recommend a politician, they're like, okay.
You know, I feel like we're getting into like a demographic issue here. I mean, I wouldn't say that your average citizen still trusts the police, mm-hmm. but I think it just depends on who you ask, really, because it depends on where you're from, what you look like, yeah. how much money you have, and how much privilege you have. So
why do we think that they're powerful then? Why do we think the union's powerful?
Well, they have a lot of money, and a lot of that goes into influencing politics.
Mm-hmm. I think the police supported Rick Caruso,
mm-hmm.
lost.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're that powerful anymore.
That's a fair question. I mean, I think that the fact that, look, what was his name? Jamie McBride.
Right.
He's the president. you know, gets on TV last year after the Watch the Watchers website is released and starts basically crying about, you know, his photo and his friend's photos being online. Jamie's an actor or aspiring actor or whatever. And all the cops that were saying that they were undercover, or not all of them, sorry. Some of the cops that were saying were in that secret undercover unit were aspiring actors. They had LinkedIn profiles and all that stuff. And so it's this whole saga is directly tied to the police union.
Yes.
And it all goes back to the police union in my theory.
Yes.
And Heidi just wanted to appease them so that in, what is it, 2 years from now or something, you know, whenever she has to get reelected, you know, she can say like, oh, I was your attack dog. I was your canine. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to bat for you. I already showed you that I'll essentially go against everything that has been established in the Constitution and by landmark cases just to appease you. And now look, she lost.
Right. Right? They both lost.
Yeah.
Are there any undercover cops at the LAPD?
I mean, I've heard different things. Mm-hmm. I've heard people say no. I've heard people say yes. There's sense officers in sensitive assignments, like all that to say, I don't even know.
when you originally got the 9,000 photos,
mm.
did they? Please correct me if I'm
sure,
wrong, because I'm probably
wrong. Sure.
I thought they gave you the 9,000, and then they're like, oh, whoops, there's a few that we need back. Did that happen, or was it a different situation with the plainclothes cops?
They gave the photos out and then said, oops, we need all of them back because there are undercovers in the set.
Right.
And they weren't just going to take back the alleged undercovers because then that would identify them.
To you.
To anyone, because they were already out there.
Oh, this was already public.
Right, right.
In Santa Ana, did they...
To your point about like, yes, this was already out there... The photos had been released since like September to March. What is that, 6 months or so?
Uh-huh.
So the photos had already been public for 6 months prior to Watch the Watchers ever, you know, being published.
So the responsibility was on the cops when they, because they didn't just immediately say, oh, you want these? Boom, here you go. So right. They had time to weed out the undercovers.
Yes.
So the onus is on them.
Absolutely.
And because they didn't release, or because they didn't not...
redact or...
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Then there probably isn't any undercover cops.
I mean, that's... There probably is one.
There's one undercover
there's probably
cop
zero.
Around.
I don't know. See...
Waldo's
like,
out there?
I don't... See, like, I've heard conflicting things that I don't even want to comment on it.
That raises an interesting question because there was two articles that I read about your case last night.
Sure.
The first was from the LA Times, and it's always good when the LA Times is covering you, especially when you're winning. But in and then there was the judicial
courthouse news.
Yeah, yes. Hillel Aaron.
Yes.
So between those two, I have a few notes, and sure. I rarely have notes because this is legal, and I'm a stoner, and I don't want to get any of this wrong. I thought part of the agreement with the Protective League. Okay, so in the LA Times piece, quote, in April, the Protective League agreed to drop its suit, according to online court records.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what you're talking about? Those aren't the 900 cops?
No, that's referring to when the Watch the Watchers website drops and the police union sues the city, demanding the city do, quote unquote, do something about this.
Okay.
Which is what the city used to sue me.
So that's just the union pressuring the city to get the pictures back, quote unquote.
Yes.
The second one is a civil thing where we want to sue for money from the city because they released this data.
And that was filed in September of last year.
Okay. So they haven't pushed that back.
No, that's still ongoing. That's what
Because they're probably going to win that, right?
I don't know. I mean, they haven't presented any evidence that any of these people have been hurt in any way. And I think it's just really like a cash cow because, for example, they're suing anonymously or pseudonymously, as they say.
Right. John Doe's.
Right. So you'll see the literal lawsuit says like John Doe 1, John Doe 2. The attorneys are so annoying that they listed it all the way to 900. So there's just like pages and pages and pages. Just John Doe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Right. So I lost my train of thought.
With a carriage return or is there a comma?
There's a comma.
All right. Good.
Yeah. and so that was filed in September and they filed pseudonymously. And in order for a lawsuit, as I just learned like in the past couple of weeks, in order for a lawsuit to continue. So if you're suing pseudonymously, and you want to reach trial pseudonymously, you have to go through a process to kind of lock in your pseudonymity status.
Mm-hmm.
The cops, the anonymous cops never went through that process, nor did the city ever raise the issue and force them to go through the proper process. So we get sued in that case in January. And one of the things that we've been saying is like, why are we going to be on the hook for these anonymous people? We don't even know who's going to receive our money. How do we know anything about these people? But the main point of that is that if we got all the way to trial, it would how are we going to bring in witnesses to, you know, to cross-examine them if we have to agree that these people are anonymous,
just these phantoms out there,
right? And so the reason I say it's a cash cow is because the city is just bending over backwards for them in this case.
Also, William from the police often says that the problem with the police is incompetence. And usually I disagree with him on that because I just assume if you go to work every day for 10 years, you're going to be kind of okay at your job. Mm-hmm. You may not be great at it, but you'll be better than an amateur.
Sure.
He's saying no, no. And I bring it up because it sounds like both the cops and the city attorneys or whoever it was who did this are practicing incompetence by not doing the anonymous thing properly.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, look, let's like play. If you play it out, it means that 900 or so anonymous people are going to receive public dollars and the public isn't going to know who received it.
So it could be anybody. It could be one person.
Allegedly.
It's crazy. But that's not how bureaucracy works.
Right.
There's paperwork up the end.
Right.
And they know this.
Right.
They've never filed an anonymous John Doe case before?
I have no idea.
Again, I think all I'm hearing in my ear is William saying incompetence. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to do their jobs.
I mean, if you want to talk about incompetency, it's like, for example, on yesterday. So we were at the hearing for the second case. And we actually found out that we were going to win that case on Monday afternoon because there was a tentative ruling by the judge. And so it said, basically, we're good, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we go to court yesterday to kind of confirm that, right? But the judge has to give the city a chance to try to convince him to change his ruling. Mm-hmm. When he asks the city, you know, do you have anything to say? The city essentially said that they had not read the tentative ruling. I forget if they were aware or not that he had already ruled. And so the attorney on the phone, because the city appeared remotely, Annetta Freeman, she said that, you know, she needed 10 minutes and I could hear her kind of clicking around on her computer, trying to pull up the tentative ruling. She couldn't find it. Oh my God. And then she ended up finding it and she had to essentially argue on the spot why the tentative ruling shouldn't be adopted. Wow. And so here's this, you know, the second case in this whole saga, and the city shows up to bat and just has no idea what's going on.
They did their homework. I mean, simple homework.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, too, like, Annetta was saying that the attorney who's typically on the case for the city was on a parental leave or something like that, and so it seems like she just kind of got thrown in there, but at the same time, it's like, well, you know, how are you not preparing for something that you have the next day? You know, you at least cram the night before, you know?
And this has been going on for how long?
It's over a year. Right. Oh, the second case, 6 months for us.
Right.
But six still, months, 6 months. Right.
Still they knew.
Yeah.
And let's say this parental care was not to be dramatic, but like sure. a graduation.
Sure.
Or to be dramatic, maybe it was a medical emergency. Only one guy knew about the Ben Camacho case in that whole office? No. I think what happened was when they lost, they gave up. They thought it was a real L, right? They didn't think they had a second chance.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but the cases are, I think they're fundamentally different. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, the first one has to do with essentially like censorship and speech. Mm-hmm. Second one is more just indemnity, you know, just it has to do with money.
Yeah.
And in my head, too, they're very different because, you know, however people feel about the first case or even just cop photos being published, it really doesn't have anything to do with the second case.
Right.
Because the second case is the city trying to hold me financially accountable for this whole thing, which is a personal attack, right?
Oh, you think so?
100%. I mean, it's if you're going after my wallet, it's how I put food on the table. It's how I pay mm-hmm. rent. Like, it's... I'm just... I'm one dude, and the city of LA wants me to pay what could potentially be millions of dollars.
You're one dude doing your job mm-hmm. that's protected by the Constitution.
That they allowed me to do by giving me the photos.
That they handed over.
Right, right.
Right. It's the silliest case.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It's ridiculous. And I mean, think it's a huge embarrassment for Heidi, really. Like, I think she should step down. How do you come back for something like this? And plus, there's that other story that ran last week about, you know, one of her top attorneys within the office suing her now. And, you know, she's saying she's drinking on the job. She's calling shots where, you know, she's being very subjective as to who to prosecute. You know, mm-hmm. she's chose not to prosecute, allegedly, what was it, like a developer or a corporation or something?
It was a corporation, and her example was... It only took one lawsuit to take down Arthur Anderson.
Yeah, one misdemeanor.
Right.
Or something.
What? Right.
And then she chooses to prosecute a protester. I think that's very clear what's going on. And I think what Heidi has been doing ever since she came into office is she's making these decisions based on what's going to help her politically. Mm-hmm. You know, if she can say, "Hey, LAPPL, you know, police union, I'm your canine. Check me out. Mm-hmm. Hey, company, I'm your person. I won't prosecute you. Hey, protester, I'm gonna prosecute you." Like, right. It's very clear where she's standing.
And she almost always loses.
Yes.
Is another reason she should step down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I honestly, I'm not too familiar with any of the cases that she's involved in, except the ones that I've been involved right. in. So
she's always losing. And, you know, I mean, I'm a huge Cub fan. We just paid all this millions of dollars for... I think we paid the most amount of money for a manager ever. And we're in last place. And the team that we got him from mm-hmm. is in first place, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which shows you maybe paying the manager isn't going to guarantee a win. Mm-hmm. And maybe if the manager is bad, no matter how much you're paying him, he should go. In Heidi's case, she should definitely go because she's terrible at her job. She's sloppy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She doesn't follow the Constitution. She seems to have it in for anybody that the cops tell her to be into.
Yeah. And I think to kind of like go off that too, like I think Karen Bass is looking at her and she, I mean, if I were Karen, I would reconsider the relationship there. I mean, it was kind of funny to see them at the Pride Parade, right? I was seeing some videos.
In the same convertible.
Yeah, in the same thing. And they're, you know, they're smiling and waving together and stuff. Right. But I mean, after this week, I can't see how Karen, unless, you know, she fully and wholeheartedly supports Heidi's vendettas.
Right.
Then I just don't see how, you know, Heidi has a future in the city.
Let's talk about the mayor real quick.
Sure.
Because that one breaks my heart. I didn't know Heidi before she came into office. Just like we didn't know Alex Villanueva before he became sheriff.
Good times, right?
And they both turned out to be disasters. Yeah. And now this mayor, I kind of feel like if Caruso had won, he'd be doing exactly the same things that she was doing. In fact, the mayor, when the pictures were released, said it was an egregious mistake to release the photos.
Yeah, and I think categorizing it as a mistake, too, has been one of the biggest lies that Karen and Heidi have told the city this whole time.
It's a lie because they know that it's legal to give public information to the press?
Well, that, but more so that, you know, prior to the releasing the photos, there was a roster that was released. This roster had all the names of the cops and there was no apparent redactions on it. And then, so that was released January 22. And then the photos are released in September 22. Mm-hmm. And I think during the time of them considering the photos, them realizing they had to release the photos, and they're looking at these photos, they're like, well, what should we redact? Well, nothing, because they already gave out the roster. If they were to redact anything, they would self-identify the undercovers in the set. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's not inadvertent. It's that they wanted a reason or an opportunity to blame somebody else, me mm-hmm. and the coalition, yeah. for this whole thing.
Right. Sure. It's great that there's women in power, right? Yes. No disrespect there. It's also great that there's a woman of color leading LA. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. But when you act exactly the same as a white billionaire dude, what did we do?
No different, just a different color.
Right. Yeah. What did we do? Also, both Heidi and the mayor in their 60s. And I don't want to be an ageist because I'm old too. And I'm not that far away from my 60s as well. But I haven't had a career in politics and in law. So that I have probably a golden parachute awaiting for me or savings up the ying. Mm. I don't have jack. So I do have to hustle right now. Mayor Bass doesn't have to hustle. Mm-mm. She could actually be the mayor that we thought we were hiring. And if she's a one-termer, so be it. She can go be a college president somewhere. She could go on a speaking tour as the first black female mayor.
She could also issue an apology.
Is that what you want from her?
I don't want that, but I think it'd be good for her to do that.
I tweeted to Heidi today and said she should apologize to you.
Yeah, she should definitely apologize to me. But, you know, as her team during mediation said, we don't apologize. We asked for an apology and they responded by saying that they don't apologize.
Do you apologize for things?
I do apologize for things. I think people should apologize for things if they've done harm. And this is one of the biggest harms in the past few years that LA has done to the public.
This is the other thing that I don't understand about lawyers.
Sure.
Of which I am not, obviously. The First Amendment seems pretty clear.
Yeah.
Because it's almost a left-right combination. It's the freedom of speech, but there's also the freedom of the press. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you couldn't be more protected by the Constitution, I would think. Mm-hmm. Therefore, this should have been thrown out immediately. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was interesting when you informed me that it was her staff, not Heidi, it mm-hmm. seems like, mm-hmm. who made that settlement. Because they said, we don't have any evidence against him.
Right.
Do you think she was involved in that?
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, Heidi is a shot caller. She's in the office, boss. Right? So, and even then, like, going back to mediation, I forget if they actually did have to call her, but there was, God, what do they call it? I think it's, they use the word authority when you're in mediation, where it's kind of like, you know, if the settlement amount starts getting close to a certain cap, then you know, how much authority do you have? And so if the settlement has to go higher than that cap, you have to call someone who has authority. And in that case, you know, I would have to assume it's the head of the office, Heidi.
Right. I'm very happy for you. But in one of these articles, it said that you were stressed out and it was anxiety kind of a situation, which reminded me of Lex and his trauma with which, and his lasted a year. Like Fuhrer told him he's got to keep his nose clearing for a year. Otherwise they will prosecute him.
Wow.
You didn't have that kind of a situation exactly. But in this article, it said that you were really stressed out. How stressed out?
I mean, litigation is jarring. I just wanted to report on what I report on, and, you know, I got a lot more than that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, going back to the first day, I remember I couldn't calm down. I remember, you know, even after meeting with my lawyer and knowing we were going to fight and that I was going to have pro bono representation, I remember sitting on the couch and just being like, this is crazy. And like, I couldn't like calm my breathing down.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though you didn't have to pay for the lawyers, even though in your heart you knew you were probably going to win.
Yeah.
But there's always this random thing that could happen, right?
And it did happen. We remember if we lost the anti-slap last year in the first case, which is bizarre.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we're the judge, as I think I read an article, it said like it green lights a prior restraint on these public records. And so, I mean, it was really just really took a toll on me, I'd say. Remember, I stopped working out for a minute. Mm-hmm. Just felt extremely, there were days where I did feel the pressure of this whole thing. Cause I mean, it's one to get sued, but then it's also that it could set a precedent for journalists and the public in the state and potentially across the country. It could affect the free flow of information
and allow local governments to say, no, we're not going to give you this public information.
Right. And so it's like all of that I fell on my shoulders,
a lot of pressure.
And that's why I was like, no, like I have to fight. Like, it's not something that, you know, we're just going to hand them back the flash drive or something. Mm-hmm. We have to defend this, because what was at stake was the First Amendment and press freedom. And we won.
Look at this. Okay, everybody at home, you may have heard my cats in the background. I'm a very bad cat dad. So I put my cats in the laundry room and they were crying. Ben, because he has a pure heart and says he likes cats, said, oh, let him in. So now my big fat cat Prince is licking Ben's hands so comfortably in his lap. Ben has the biggest smile I've seen all day. This is just such a wholesome scene right here.
I love animals.
You do?
Yeah, I'm vegan too.
You're a catch, man. You're on a winning streak. You're vegan. You're working out. You love animals. Yeah. You're defending the First Amendment for
doing,
all.
I'm just doing me, dude.
Yeah, I mean,
and look, I think I do want to acknowledge that, like, it's helped me along the way that folks have just supported my work.
Did you feel the love and support from the community?
Yeah, it was, I couldn't ignore it. It was immense. You know, from day one, like people who were there for me, like Susan Seeger and Surrey's Castle, who were like, hey, you know, let's talk about this. Let's figure this out and stuff. To my family, to my friends who were probably freaked out, but I was like, it's got to be okay, you know? And so I think just like having this mentality that, so to your question of like, you know, we're going to go into this battle, we're going to go into this war. I think at first I definitely was not ready for it because it caught me off guard.
Really?
But I think the second case is where I felt a huge change, which I already was kind of going through in the fall of last year, knowing that the first case had to go into a higher court. And I think that's when I started to like think about more about, you know, what it means to be in this fight. Come along the second case in January, and it was just kind of like, okay, mask off. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about government repression. Let's talk about censorship. Let's talk about how Heidi Feldstein Soto is essentially just an attack dog, an extension of the police union, an extension of the, you know, the developers in the city, and has no issue with attacking the First Amendment. And I've just felt myself, you know, being the target of repression is something that will radicalize somebody. And I was already, you know, doing the work that I was doing.
Yeah.
But being the target of this has just pushed that more and more and more and more out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why lately I've been writing things online that I feel like are capturing what it's like to be in this fight, but also showing that like these people, when they, you know, when they put out whenever, whatever press release, or if these politicians ever get on record about this stuff, it's going to be some watered down, dismissive statement.
Right.
I'm going to say that right now. That's what it's going to be. It's not going to be an apology. It's not going to be accountability. It's going to be, oh, we apologize and, you know, let's give the cops the safety they deserve. It's going to be something like that.
Let's talk about safety, because sure. I talk to my mom almost every night. And last night I told her I was going to talk to you about this. And as I'm describing it, she was like, oh my God, he released the photos of the police? I was like, Ma. Cops have guns in their own house. They have training. They have bulletproof vests.
Mm.
Journalists get killed probably more than police do because we don't have any of that stuff.
Yeah.
We don't have a union, really. You're not in a union.
I am in a union.
Excuse me? Which union is this?
The IWW Freelance Journalist Union.
Shout out.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I chair the legal committee there, where I help organize to provide legal support for journalists, freelance journalists.
Look at you, Ben Camacho. So, of the independent journalists in LA, let's just say, who might not be covered under a union, can they come to you guys independently be a union member?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the union is open to any interested freelancer.
How about that?
Really? Yeah.
So how about like these YouTubers, YouTube video journalists who say that they're journalists?
I mean, if they say they're journalists. You know,
how about that? They can be protected by you or part of your union.
Yeah. I don't think we should, you know, discriminate against folks who just live stream, versus, you know, folks who are doing.
I love this.
Yeah.
Are there dues in this union?
There are dues, yes.
Just like most unions?
Yeah, there are dues. I do believe FJU has like the opt-out option for that.
Right on.
I opt out because I don't have enough to do any of that. But I mean, right. I put my part in for the union and I'm doing a lot of work for them. So I'm I don't know. I feel like it balances out, you know?
Okay, let's go back to the stress that you were under real quick.
Sure.
Because I feel like you knew you were poking the bear when you did it first with the Santa Ana cops. You won. It sounds like you won kind of easily in Santa Ana. Mm-hmm. Maybe more easily than you probably expected. Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, I was very new to like litigation. That was the first thing that that was the first time that I had to like engage with the court to get stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was easy. I mean, the police union dropped the case once they realized that it was stupid to try to withhold stuff like this.
Right.
I forgot.
Okay. So I feel like you fought that fight and it was kind of easy. So then we went to the, I don't want to call it the big leagues. I mean, Santa Ana, they're professionals too.
Sure. I mean,
they might be more professional in this case because they obey the First Amendment.
Right.
But you're still poking a bear. And so when you do that, there's probably going to be a fight at some point. And so your stress came about because the fight was more than you thought it was going to be. Or is it just stressful just to be in any fight?
I think because the LAPD is so massive and coming from where I come from, I know that cops don't always go by the book.
Yeah.
And so there's that. There's the fact that the city attorney is an attack dog, an extension for the police union, and the police union is such a, you know, significant political force.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of like stacked up, right? And, you know, we have the First Amendment, but as we saw in the third hearing in the first case, it's like that didn't do anything. The judge was like, okay, yeah, let's claw back those photos.
And this was the anti-slap.
Correct.
And that was the judge who said, yes, let's continue with this case. I'm not going to immediately throw it out based on the First Amendment.
Correct.
Do you remember that judge's name?
Yes. And for the record, I gave you the wrong name last time.
Oh, you did?
Which I'm sorry about.
Did I correct it?
I think I sent you a text or something like
that. Then I corrected it.
Okay. Anthony Moore is the judge. Anthony Moore, M-O-H-R.
Who could have thrown it out immediately, but didn't.
Yeah, who could have granted the slap, and that's it.
But it might be because of my mom's theory, which is just this basic Andy Griffith one, which is we need to protect cops at all costs because they could be hurt somehow. And I'm like, it's a picture, Mom.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that's starting to get into like that the police force is a political force. And I think as a mayor, historically, as politicians are elected into these positions where, like in LA, the mayor has a lot of power. She has a lot of discretion. They have a lot of discretion as to what happens. If they don't have the cops on their side, their job is going to be a lot harder.
Right.
Because, you know, they have to be able to promise, you know, quote unquote safety for people,
mm-hmm.
Quote unquote, you know, services for people and stuff. And if the cops, which they have done, orchestrate a work slowdown, then these mayors can't make those promises. And so it's like they have to, you know, have influence with the cops. They have to appease them. And so that's mm-hmm. why these police unions have so much power, because they know that they can leverage this relationship.
Mm-hmm. And I think we saw that at the UCLA protests where the cops were a little butthurt that they couldn't go into the campus right away
mm-hmm.
because I guess at UCs, they have their own cops.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to allow.
Yeah, there's layers to it.
Right.
Yeah.
There's protocol.
Right.
And cops don't like that.
Right.
They like to just bum rush the show whenever they want to.
Yeah.
And so so when they were finally called, they dragged their feet like princesses for 13, 14 hours and then bum rushed the show at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. I was there that night.
You were there?
Yeah. That was one of the most crazy things I've ever witnessed.
How long had you been there?
I got there about 4 p.m.
Yeah. During the day. They're almost 12 hours.
Yeah. And when I finally got in the camp around midnight or something like that. And, you know, the air was very, very tense by that point. And, you know, folks were running around in the camp a lot and a lot of false alarms and all that stuff. But I think being inside the camp, this is definitely a tangent, but just being inside the camp and witnessing this like energy that, you know, students have about this genocide that's happening, it was inspiring, really. I was honestly overwhelmed by the energy that I felt in there. But to your point about the cops, I mean, they had been there like all day. When I showed up, the LA sheriffs had been occupying the lawn the lawn across from the Dixon? I don't know the layout, but they had set up their cars there and stuff, and so they were there all afternoon, all evening, and then I think they moved out around 7 or something like that. Right. And here CHP's coming in, and then LAPD came in, then UCLA PD, and it was a whole show of force for sure prior to them actually raiding
a camp of unarmed kids
and elders. I interviewed an elder. Yeah,
I don't think you need 600 armed officers to break that up.
Yeah, and I also don't think they need to break it up in general. I think they could have just negotiated.
Oh, you do? You think they could have just talked to the kids?
Yeah, I mean, all along they've been calling for divestment, and I think divestment is not an unreasonable thing when the things that they're asking for divestment from are killing kids across the seas.
Yes, that's very idealistic.
We don't have to get into it.
No, yeah. I'm just saying, if the mayor and the governor calls the cops to break it up, you do the job. Right. And this is where, in our previous episode with William, he disagreed with me. Mm-hmm. I said, you probably only need about 30, 40 cops to break up a camp of a bunch of students who are unarmed.
I think I might disagree with you.
How many would you call?
Well,
Mayor Camacho.
The main reason that I would never be mayor. Fuck that. The main reason that I think that you would need more than 40 cops is because I saw the moment that 30 to 40 cops first broke down the barricade and were immediately surrounded by the protesters.
Yes.
Who were holding, you know, umbrellas and trash cans to protect themselves from the cops.
And they had to retreat.
They retreated.
Which again, I think speaks more into William's theory of incompetence. You had all day to look at the war field, the battlefield.
Which they were. I mean, they had surveillance.
They had helicopters. Yeah. They had people in buildings.
Yeah.
Yep. I still think, and I'm a pacifist.
Sure.
I still think Mayor Pierce could have been like, okay, I need 5 over there. I need 5 over there. I need some smoke bombs. I need some, you know what I'm saying? Like, these are professional people.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can't beat these students. Now, granted, the students' heart is in this. Mm-hmm. And that's different. Mm-hmm. When you're doing something because you love it, compared and you really care, as opposed to for money, you might win.
Yeah.
And they kind of did win on that first battle.
Yeah.
Right? They surrounded. They didn't retreat. I think we all expected the students to, like, move away as soon as the cops showed up in force, but they didn't. They saw their chance to really step up to what they were for.
Yeah, I mean, I have been inspired by them, really, because they're showing the world, you know, what it means to stand up and say enough.
Right.
We're all seeing photos of you know, headless kids, families being, you know, entire bloodlines being wiped off the face of the earth. We're all paying for it. Our president is saying, you know, oh no, you know, he's upset that it's happening, but won't stop it from happening. And the whole world's watching, really. And the students are the ones that are leading this, you know, movement, this anti-war movement, and saying
American, we need to stop. Students.
Yeah, American students that are. And this all started at some of the most privileged institutions, these Ivy League schools. It may have been Columbia, that may have been the first one.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, think about that. Like, these are students that come from extremely privileged families. These are CEOs whose sons and daughters are the ones at the camps, you know? Yeah. And so when they go home, what's going to, you know, this is challenging these power structures that have existed in the country for decades.
Yes. Yeah. Which to me is what college is about.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, college is overrated mm-hmm. and it's expensive and all that. When I was in college, it was the first Desert Storm, Desert Shield thing. And I was not an activist, but talk about being radicalized. When you see, I mean, you kind of learn from your peers. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, oh, I guess this is wrong. Right after I smoke this bong load, I'm going to go out there. but that doesn't happen when you're just at junior college.
Right.
Or walking down the street. I think it helps that you go back to the dorm and the kids are talking about it. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of learning from them. And there mm-hmm. are a few leaders out there, even student leaders, who rise to the top.
Yeah.
And inspire people. And so that's what I appreciated from UCLA, USC, even my gauchos at Santa Barbara are doing good work.
That's true. I forgot about that.
And that school has not inspired me in the last couple mm-hmm. thousand years. I mean, and so to see them do that now mm-hmm. really gives me hope because that generation has been written off yeah. as TikTok generation right. and they don't care and they're right. all about influencers and mm-hmm. eating Tide Pods and like... That is not the case. I mean, I mentioned American mm. students because in Europe, they're saying that, mm. that they're inspired by what's happening over yeah. here.
Yeah. And I mean, there's photos of people in Gaza, in Rafah, that wrote words like, thank you, students, on their tents. Like, you can't get any closer to it from there, you know? Like, these are the actual people that have been displaced that are being killed saying thank you. And I think, like, you know, like however folks feel about occupying a public space, I don't think it matters because I think it's effective because it's for a lot of people, it's the first time that they're saying anything about the genocide, even if they're saying we disagree. But I think silence is complicity and the students have forced people to say something, anything.
And the general public's not doing it much.
Right.
And so... If it comes from the students, great. Because mm-hmm. now we're paying attention to it. The mm-hmm. debate is all about should it be happening in public schools, private schools, even what we're talking about with 600 cops at UCLA mm-hmm. and that dynamic mm-hmm. and journalists being arrested, just all that stuff wouldn't have happened if not for the students.
Yeah, yeah. And I think to kind of circle back too, like I think... people should request the UCPD headshots because I'm curious who are the ones that brutalize the students. You know, although CHP is the one that did it, CHP is also still, you know, required to comply with public records requests. So I think it'd be interesting to see who brutalized the students at UCLA.
Talk about Knock LA.
Sure.
Were you at UCLA for Knock LA?
No, I was just there on my Twitter, really. I was just live tweeting and shooting my camera.
You're such a journalist that you'll go to a spot even if you're not assigned, even if you don't know if there's a story there.
It just felt like the place to be. Yeah.
I love this. Yeah. You're 29, according to the LA Times.
Yes.
Maybe it's that. Because at 57, I'm like, yeah, I'll watch it on TV.
Oh, yeah. I felt like shit the next day. I was like, God damn. I think Cal State LA popped up in the next couple of days. And I was like, okay, I think I'm going to just watch from
home. Oh, you did pass on that one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's been an interesting one, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
People talk about the graffiti. They're like, yeah, okay, but why are you spraying... the building, it's like, that's a beautiful, Ackerman Hall is a beautiful building. And I'm like, who cares about the spray paint, bro?
Yeah, there's babies being beheaded by right. bombs that you have paid for.
Right.
Just
okay, so let's talk about Knock. Yeah. So you weren't there for Knock, but they've been in the news, quote unquote.
Yes.
because ground game, now we're really getting to the weeds, and there's probably only like 8 listeners who understand any of this, and I'm not even part of that group.
Okay.
I'm learning from you.
Yeah.
So from what I've learned, there's ground game, which is, would you call that an activist group?
They are an electoral politics, political action committee.
Oh, they really? They're a PAC?
Well, they act like a PAC, but they are an activist organization.
Yes. Okay, so I was right.
Yes.
Okay, and once upon a time, they created Knock LA, which was a journalistic arm of the group.
It was not a journalistic arm. It was their blog.
It was their blog.
Yes. I think 2017 is when it was created.
A lot of people, when they hear the word blog, don't think it's real, don't think it's journalism, think it's just opinion-based.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what Knock was in 2017?
I mean, honestly, I had no idea because I wasn't there
at
the time. I joined Knock LA 2022.
Okay.
After the relaunch as a newsroom. So, I mean, prior to me arriving, I think I had heard of Knock LA or something. I only knew the sheriff gang story.
Right. Cerise's.
Yeah.
We're Cerise, but for those who didn't hear Ben's first episode with us, you should, because it was really good. But also, not because of me, because of you. But in it, we talked about how Cerise basically kind of broke the story about how there's all these gangs in the sheriff's department, and they identify themselves with tattoos. And that tattoo story continues even to this day, where a bigwig, I guess they've changed their policy because of Knock, where it says if you're a captain and you have a gang tattoo, you've got to tell us, and then we can decide whether you can continue to be promoted.
Right.
And so this captain, I think he was, had a Bandidos tattoo and covered it. Like, I guess he just black marked it over it, which is progress.
Yeah.
Right?
It's something.
And so that all came from this activist group's journalistic... Am I wrong to call it a journalistic arm?
So when Tradition of Violence was published, it was concurrent with Knock LA being relaunched as a newsroom. So when that happened, it was the first iteration of Knock being a journalistic project.
Project, not an arm, because if Ground Game says cover this, you're like, there's a wall here.
Correct.
Okay. I'm honestly not trying to diss.
No, you know? I'm laughing because that's one of the things that happened that led up to the split. But exactly. We'll get into it, sure.
We can get into it now.
Yeah.
So at some point, Ground Game was upset at Knock, which blows my mind because there's not that many independent journalists out there or organizations. Mm-hmm. And LA Taco seems to be on their last leg right now.
Mm-hmm.
LAist is not the LAist that I was part of. Yeah. And LA Weekly's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how many others are there? There's LA Public Press.
Like Public Press. Yeah, they're doing really good work.
They are doing
Gallo,
good.
Which I'm is sorry, like who? Gallo, C-A-L-O. They're like a Latino news organization.
Mm-hmm.
Black Voice News. Yeah.
So not a lot.
No, it's not a lot. I mean, we're a city.
And Knock, I mean, Google LASD gangs. I mean, yeah, that worked. That got people to your website.
Yeah.
And shout out to People's City Council because they were the first that taught me about doing that. And they made really cool stickers. And it all fed to that website.
Yeah.
That original Knock LA website.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, Ground Game didn't like what Knock was doing or asked Knock of something that Knock felt uncomfortable with. And there was pressure and Ground Game took the passwords away from Knock LA.
So you want to hear about the lockout. Okay.
Yes.
So the lockout is kind of the explosion, I would say, of what had been festering and bubbling for several months at that point.
Okay.
I would say that the kind of catalyst for the explosion was this thing that happened in October. So it was after October 7th. So, you know, we're hearing about the stuff happening in Gaza or Israel, Gaza, Palestine, and the West Bank, like that whole region. And there are folks from Ground Game who essentially come into the Knox Slack, like the workspace, and say, we have to publish this story. And it's a story about, I believe it was a Christian Palestinian with family in Gaza. And at the time, we had already been, we were broke. Knock LA was broke. Mm-hmm. And we essentially, because we're a professional newsroom and journalism is a paid profession, we, first of all, we're like, well, hey, you can't just come in and tell us to write this. So there's that. Second thing is that there was no money for it. You know, we had already, for several months, I think since like summer, had already been operating in an austerity budget. We weren't adding new stories to the workflow. We were just going to publish what had already been budgeted for. Mm-hmm. And so Ground Game took that as us blocking coverage of Gaza. Which is, I mean, a clever way of framing something like demanding free labor from professionals and getting rid of an editorial firewall or journalistic principles of a newsroom.
Were you on the editorial? Are you the photo editor?
Currently, yes.
Okay.
And at the time I was as well.
I ask because I'm curious if there was meetings between Ground Game and the ed board or the ed staff, like the hires, the managers.
No, there never was. We honestly never really heard from Ground Game until they wanted something from us, like the Gaza piece.
Okay.
So to them to come into the space and, you know, get rid of whatever editorial firewall and journalistic ethical principles extremely, you know, invalidating and offensive.
I mean, this is a compliment.
Sure.
I feel like Knock is also a bunch of hippies in that I don't think you have an editor in chief, right?
Our editor, I mean, we have managing editor. We have editor.
Is there a boss?
Yeah. I mean, the managing editor was Cerise Castle.
Okay.
Cerise Castle. Sorry.
Right. So when Ground Game wanted something, they talked to Cerise, right?
I mean, they kind of just announced it.
Well, no wonder they got said no to.
Yeah.
That's unprofessional.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's disrespectful.
Extremely unprofessional.
It's disrespectful to Cerise.
Yeah, I mean,
they know she's the boss.
Yes. But I mean, you do, like, whenever you pitch something, you would put it in the pitch channel, like in the Slack. And so it's
And did they know this?
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, you're saying there's a process.
Yeah, there's a process and there's a firewall, most important. And like, you can't just come in here and demand free labor of journalists.
Right.
Who are working and professional journalists. You know, we're not early career. We're established and we're a newsroom. Yeah. And
you're a step away from the LA Times. Who should be hiring you, first of all? Also Cerise, and several others. First of all, you're good at your job. Secondly, you're people of color, which that paper has acknowledged that they need more of.
Yeah, but they don't want to publish the type of work that we're doing. I mean, I think
Too bad.
But that speaks to the larger issue of like why we need a strictly investigative outlet in SoCal.
So you're saying you'd rather not be working for the LA Times?
If they're, I'm speculating here.
Right.
If they,
well, based on results, they don't publish the work that you
correct.
Do.
Yes.
So it sounds like they.
I'm
don't
not
want
inclined
to
work for the LA Times as an investigative reporter, but, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it's like in there, but I can only see what they publish. So
right. Yeah. I mean, I would just assume all newspapers are in trouble right now. Yeah. And if you continue to do the stuff that you did in 1981, you're going to be in worse trouble because the public has said, we're not going to pay for that. But they might pay for what you guys are doing because it's punk rock and you can't get it on TV.
Right.
So publish the stuff that isn't out there, LA Times, and maybe your subscriptions will go up. You may piss off the cops, but isn't that the job of the well, journalist?
Should just not be afraid of the cops, really. Just
do you think the Times are afraid of the cops?
I mean, I know that it took them a while to ever use one of the headshots from the release. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Even though it was public record?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
And I mean, I think to me that, like, what other photo are you going to use for a story about this? Like, they would only run photos of, you know, some wide angle of the LAPD HQ with right. cops walking in a silhouette. Like, yes. That's the only photos I ever see there.
So you're saying if a cop got in trouble and there was a story about that guy, they would just use this generic picture of Second Street?
Well, when people get in trouble, they put their mugshot up. So I think that there's a double standard there. So
right, but the cops don't issue mugshots on investigation of a assistant chief putting air tags in his lover.
Well, that's my point. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So you need a picture.
Right.
And you got the picture.
Yeah. Who's the stalker? Okay, it's the deputy chief. Okay, cool. Now I know him. If I see him around, then I'll know. Oh, maybe he might be stalking someone near me.
And so they had a few chances to use your pictures early, and they didn't.
Correct. They did cite the database in a report about the cops who detonated explosives in a neighborhood a couple of years back.
I like that story.
Yeah. Yeah. That was apparently the reporters used the database to, or, you know, the roster and or photos to.
Well, one of those reporters was Julia Wick.
Yes.
Former editor-in-chief of LAist.
Mm-hmm.
Independent journalists in the LA Times create punk rock stories and do brave, courageous things. No disrespect to the other journalists who also do brave, courageous things. I like Carrie, who's covering the sheriff. She's pretty punk rock.
Yeah, Carrie's great.
But I think that's why I'm trying to encourage you to infiltrate my favorite newspaper, because you need fresh young blood to say, oh, I'm just going to start knocking on doors of people. Yeah. And that's why I like that bomb story. Because they knocked on the door.
Yeah,
the cops.
Door knocking was good.
It was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
We should be doing that.
It's courageous, but it's also, we are trying to let you have a chance to tell your side of the story.
Right. And then they cower behind their, you know, curtain and not answer any questions, I think.
Which might be okay, because not everybody's great on the mic. I'm not great on the mic.
Sure.
I would much rather have a different host than me. I'm not great at the mic either. And if I'm a cop with this pension and the ability to lose all that if I say the wrong things,
mm-hmm.
I would probably take the fifth as well.
Well, they shouldn't do bad things to begin with, so. That's what accountability is, right? You do something wrong, you have to be held accountable. That's it.
And, you know, I asked you yesterday, do you want to be on the air? And you were like, yes. So you're living up to your word. You are the source that you want other people to be the source of.
Yeah.
Which is why I can't understand when newspapers and stuff don't go on the record when they do and when they end up doing bad things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what the hell, man?
Yeah.
This is what the newspaper's for. It's you ask people questions and they tell you.
Seriously. Have a public forum.
Okay, so let's finish up with Knock real quick.
Sure.
Okay, so there was this battle.
Yeah, so.
They locked you out. They dissed Cerise, which, bad idea. I mean, first of all, I don't even know who Ground Game is. I don't know any of those people. Oh, will you release photos of Ground Game, Mr. Camacho?
Will I release photos of Ground
Game? Of who Ground Game is, because I don't know who they are. Can we have a database of them? Or I guess that's not a public entity.
They're a nonprofit that is apparently in like suspended status with the state or something
that.
Like, I don't know. They're a mess. Their record keeping is really bad.
Wow.
Yeah. And
so it sounds like you guys spun off and created a different Knock website.
So when they locked us out, first of all, we had no notice of it. The way I found out is because I got a Slack notification. And then when I clicked on it on my phone to try to go and read the thread, it said I did not have access. Refreshed it a little bit, and then I realized, like, okay, this is where we're at. I made a call, and then realized that, you know, myself, Cerise, and I think Kacho were locked out, and
Ground Game had changed the password.
They removed us from the Slack workspace, which is essentially kind of the bulk of like the newsroom, really. Like that's where everything happens because we're a digital space, right? We don't mm-hmm. have a physical space. Mm-hmm. So
is that passive aggressive? What would you call that?
Unprofessional. Yeah. Disrespectful. Dismissive. Petty. Ridiculous.
Also, you're not a giant organization. So you just call each other and say, okay, I've started a new Slack where we can talk.
Well, so they locked us out and they essentially refused to give us access to the website, even though all of our work was on there. Mm-hmm. They locked Cerise out from her Knock LA email, which had leads, sources. It had flight information.
Because she was about to go on a trip?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Stuff like that. You know, we demanded essentially that. And so I do have to say, prior to the lockout, for about a month prior to the lockout, I went to a Ground Game meeting to read aloud our reasons for separation, because we had been pushing for separation for several months ever since the October incident. Mm. And so I went to essentially try to give some legitimacy to our demands, mm-hmm. read aloud this document that listed all of the reasons for separation. I was yelled at and gaslit at that meeting by Ground Game members. And then after that meeting, we sent essentially an asset transfer agreement where we were asking Ground Game to essentially give us the passwords and accounts for the Knock LA assets. Mm-hmm. When we were getting close to the deadline for that asset transfer, that's when Ground Game locked us out, like cowards.
Right.
And after that, we essentially decided, okay, well, you know, if they don't want to give journalists what journalists have built, then we have to essentially take it from them. We have to incorporate Knock LA because they had never incorporated Knock LA. Oh. And we created a new website that is still currently migrating all of the content from the old website. We have sent takedown and demand letters that are signed by freelancers asking or demanding that the Ground Game remove their content from the old website, which they still have not complied with.
I would never pick a fight with Cerise. And now, Mr. Camacho, you have beaten both the Santa Ana police and the LAPD. I'm not sure I want to grapple with you either.
Well, I just don't see why Ground Game would want to do something like that. I mean, well, actually, let me walk that back a little bit. I think what Ground Game wants to do and is trying to do is essentially they are co-opting journalists' work. They are piggybacking on all of the labor that myself, that Cerise Castle, that Kacha, that other freelancers in the newsroom have done. We've done groundbreaking work, obviously, since the relaunch with Tradition of Violence, with police gang stories, with surveillance stories, with culture stories. And they want to come in and swoop all of that and take it all for themselves, mm-hmm. and turn Knock LA back into their blog that's going to write, you know, fluff stories for Unisys or Ugo.
Is that what they really want to do?
Yes.
Again, I'm so ignorant to them. And I'm kind of in the mix of a lot of you, so therefore the real public has no idea.
I challenge you to go on the old Knock website and find anything bad said about Unisys or Ugo. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll bet you a drink that you won't find anything. Okay. You can ask certain journalists in the Ground Game what their relationships are with certain council members. Mm-hmm. You'll find some interesting things there too.
Okay, so the new Knock website, what's the address?
knockla.org.
Great.
Just as is.
And what was the old one? Just knock.la?
Knock-la.com.
Well, there was a dash in there?
Yes. Yeah.
I hate dashes.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I'm glad you guys fixed that one.
Yeah.
So, mostly the same staff as before?
All of the journalists have remained within the Knock Great. LA team.
So all the people everybody loves.
Yes.
The people who made Knock who it is.
Correct.
And without the riffraff.
Fully independent, free of editorial influence by an outside organization.
And so if there is a positive story about Hugo, it's because he did something good for once.
Yes.
It's not because you're friends with him.
Yes.
Which if you read the Ground Game website, you're not sure.
Sure.
And that's but that's the root of good journalism, right? You want to trust what you're reading.
Yeah, we're beholden to the truth. That's,
yeah.
That's really it. And Ground Game is not, I mean, they help politicians.
They're a pack.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you drive past their office, you see, and you know, you see Isabel Jurado's face on their front door. So, you know, they're hanging out, they're organizing. And, you know, like, I respect Isabel. I sent her a text the other day asking her what's going on with where she's at with Knock LA and Ground Game. She hasn't responded to me.
You know, she's in a tough position, though.
Yeah, she is. And, you know, it's no disrespect to her. I know she's doing. She's fighting for the community.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
you know, she was a guest here.
No, I didn't know that.
She was fantastic.
Yeah, I bet.
But she's new to politics. Mm-hmm. She's up against a guy who's not new to politics,
yeah.
And that's a crazy
yeah.
council district.
Yeah.
And I think she's poised to win.
I think so too.
Cause I mean, she beat him in the general.
Yeah.
She beat the whole field.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That was a crazy moment. I remember
the entire field
refreshing those, the results like all day. And when I saw her pull ahead, I was like, oh shit.
And so she's probably thinking, I don't want to rock the boat yet.
Right.
So maybe I partner with Ground Game. Like, who else do I got?
Then she's partnering with people who co-opt journalist work and important journalist work.
And when you say co-op, you mean in a negative way?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your advice to her would be like, you don't need them. They're weak.
I just want to know what she thinks. I'm not asking her to do anything. I would... Like, I'll show you the text that I sent her. I'm not asking her to do anything. I just asked her for where she's at with all of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Have you met her in person?
Yeah.
I was very impressed by her.
Yeah.
I was very impressed by her. And that district has gone through a lot over the last 10, 12 years. And I think they would benefit with her. But we saw with Eunices, we saw with Hugo. I think a lot of people are disappointed with Nithia too. That here we vote in who we think are not only lefties, but almost Bernie lefties.
Mm-hmm.
And then they turn out not to be like that. Almost the same with Mayor Bass. Not to the extent. We know she's not a bleeding heart. But in local governments, and I think you said it. I think you said in a city as progressive as LA, the city attorney shouldn't be like this.
Right.
And I feel the same way about city council.
Correct. And the people behind certain politicians should also not be this way. And so that's why I think, you know, what Ground Game is trying to do is such a snake move. It's petty. It's cowardice to, you know, co-opt a space that has only been doing radical journalism and pushing the envelope on what journalism is.
Ground Game, you are not journalists.
Right.
You're going against some really good journalists.
In my opinion, they
are
already
crazy.
Lost. Like, they're not going against us. They are completely incompetent at running a newsroom, and they're not even running a newsroom. It's
right.
Just they took the keys away and expected us to go away.
Yes.
But I don't think that they can come back from this. I think that you know, it's the same thing as what the city attorney is doing, trying to silence me, trying to silence a group of reporters that, or deplatform a group of reporters that have been doing nothing but honestly incredible work. And like, it's been one of the greatest experiences of my life to be able to report with folks from Knock LA. It's the same, it's within the same vein, you know. We have threats from the government and we have threats from Ground Game LA, so there's no difference really.
You're fighting a two-front war and you're winning.
Yes.
Let's go back to winning.
Sure.
Because you won yesterday big time.
Yeah, we fucking won.
Did you celebrate yesterday?
Yeah, I had a beer and some food. Really good food. Yeah.
You're vegan. Is that even possible?
Okay. All right.
What was the delicious food you had?
I went to Boulon. It's right there. It's down, what street is that?
It sounds familiar. I must have passed it.
You know the Erewhon?
I do know the Erewhon.
It's across the street.
The Silver Lake Erewhon?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right across.
Is it a Thai place, yes. That place?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, is that Hoover? No. What is that little street?
It's like, it's whatever Santa Monica turns into.
Yeah.
If you just keep going.
So when you're going to the 4100, is that the one? Is that the street? No, it's Erewhon. Yeah.
It's literally across the street from Erewhon in like a little...
It is the 4100.
A little peninsula type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's... So, are you not a drinker?
I mean, I like drinking, but I'm not... So
there's the 4100 club, and then there's the Jiffy Lube.
Yeah.
And that road, that mm-hmm. little baby road in mm-hmm. between that leads to the Erewhon. Mm-hmm. Do you ever shop at the Erewhon?
No. I went there one time, and I'm never going back.
I like to pee there. Their bathrooms are very clean and their soap smells good.
I believe it. I might have to do it one time.
Uber drivers always know where to pee. Okay. The Venice one is excellent.
Right.
Yes. Okay. So Boulon's across the street. It's Thai?
Yeah. It's a Thai kitchen. It's a vegetarian Thai kitchen and most of it's vegan, honestly. So yeah.
I am so impressed when Thai restaurants near Thai town are successful. Because you would think, why put it there? Like, be far away from Thai town. Like, the competition's got to be crazy. But it works sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I think my favorite Thai spot, I have two really good Thai places. One is here in LA, and one is in random Ridgecrest up near, like, China Lake.
Where is that China Lake?
It's like on the way to Death Valley.
Oh, in the desert.
It's like in the desert, yeah. Super random, but that's a whole different story.
So some Thai family just sort of like, we're going to live here.
Yeah, and they have the best pad see you I've ever had. But if I'm in LA, which I usually am,
yeah,
Jitlada on Sunset.
Absolutely.
Jonathan Gold. Yeah.
Jazz is the chef.
Yeah.
What do you get at Jitlada?
The pad see you.
Okay. Yeah. What's in pad see you? Is that a flat noodle?
Yeah, it's a flat noodle.
Okay.
Yeah. Flat noodle, broccoli.
Yes.
Tofu.
Do you ever get their fried salad?
No.
I think it's called the Morning Glory fried salad.
Okay.
Which is crazy. but it's so good.
Yeah.
And I don't know what parts are fried. I don't think the lettuce is fried.
Okay.
So maybe it does have some non-vegan things in there.
But yeah, yesterday was a good day.
Okay. You brought your camera. And I don't think that's a digital camera. That looks like a film camera.
Yeah.
Are you going to take some pictures today?
I usually have it if I'm walking around.
You're just always taking pictures.
I try to.
Yeah. I love that. Do you get nervous taking pictures of people?
No. No.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's just...
Because those are the best pictures.
Yeah, and I mean, you can... If someone's really doesn't want you to take a picture, you can tell right away.
Yeah.
You know? And so most people don't care. I think only one person has ever told me to delete a photo when I'm shooting on the street, so...
Do you ask permission?
No. Oh. No.
Because I've started to ask permission.
Yeah. I mean, look, like...
Because I do get nervous. That's why I ask.
Yeah. I think there are moments when I have, if something, it's a feeling, but I would say 90% of the time I do not ask permission.
Well, because you're also a journalist.
Yeah.
And I'm not usually coming at it from that angle.
Yeah.
And you probably want the candid to be truly candid, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the best pictures.
It's my favorite.
So. Do you have a personal website that we can go and look at your pictures?
I have some photo essays on my website. It's just firstnamelastname.com.
So. Okay.
BenCamacho.com.
I know you want to give some shout outs to your lawyers, probably.
Yeah.
Susan, was it?
Susan Seeger was the lead attorney on the clawback case.
Can I read what Susan said?
Yeah, absolutely.
Courtroom news or whatever that was.
Yeah.
She goes, it's important to remember that the LAPD did not submit a single piece of evidence that any officers were harmed by the disclosure of these photographs. This was never about officers being harmed by disclosure of their photos. It was always about officers being mad that they were being held accountable for their actions. What actions?
Violating civil rights, killing people, beating people up, blocking cameras from recording them.
So in our previous example about the assistant chief,
mm-hmm.
Stalking, yeah, basically. Yeah,
Labrada, right?
Is that what she's referring to? When police are bad and these photos are being used in journalistic mm-hmm. reasons?
Because mm-hmm.
that's really what you're doing. You're not making T-shirts of people.
Right.
You're using it for news stories.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a resource, ultimately. And mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I'm sure it sounds like just the general idea of accountability and having photos of someone to confirm their identity is very useful
mm-hmm.
in that.
So, okay, so shout out Susan.
Yeah, Susan Seeger, Colleen Flynn, and Dan Stormer on that first case. Yeah, I mean, they, from the start, they just really held the city to the First Amendment. Because that's really the end all be all for this. Like, this should have never been filed because of the First Amendment. Right. Every other argument was really just secondary to that. And the second case is Shakir Rahman and Dan Stormer and Colleen Flynn again. Yeah.
So six lawyers.
Seven, technically. Rebecca Brown was on the first case.
Does Rebecca get
some? Or sorry, on the second case.
Does Rebecca get some of that 300 G's?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not really part of the conversation.
You're not the banker?
I'm the client. I'm just the...
You're both a very hard person to interview and a very good person to interview.
What do you mean?
Well, you're good because you tell the truth, which is nice. I trust you and believe you. But you do not make any assumptions. So it's hard.
I'm a reporter.
I know.
My credibility is on the line.
I love
it. Whenever I get on the mic.
Okay, so let's dispel a myth that I may have propagated out there in the world.
Sure.
Because I think my screaming headline in all caps was Ben Camacho wins 300K. I was being crazy. I hope when I do things in all caps, people know I'm being a little bit crazy and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also rubbing into Heidi, which I love doing.
Yeah. And I think as someone, because I know you.
Yeah.
Like, I know how you mean that.
Good.
You know, I do.
Good.
But then, like, there's been times where, like, I tweet something that's, like, if you know me, you'll know that I fuck around or, like, I'm sarcastic a lot.
Right.
I like to make people laugh. And, like,
right.
you know, maybe, like, I remember one time a buddy texted me, like, hey, like, maybe use like /S because that means sarcastic.
Right.
Because like I'm in my head. I'm like, haha, this is so funny. And I tweet. But then like somebody else who has no idea who I really am is like, oh, why is this person saying that?
Yes.
So, anyway, sorry.
Okay. Yeah. So I put it out there that mm-hmm. you were winning mm-hmm. 300 grand. But I think I linked to the story that said it was all going mm-hmm. to the lawyers anyways. And so I assumed people knew I was just being crazy. But... To set the matter straight, you're not getting a dime from the city.
Correct.
It's all going to the lawyers.
Correct.
And hopefully they're going to split it. Well, they get to fight about it. They get to decide who deserves
more. Yeah, I remember they kind of briefly talked about how they were going to split it during mediation.
Great.
So, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any issues there.
But it sounds like we still need to pray that the city council will do the right thing.
Yeah, and you know, I heard it's... rare, if not, say rare.
If they said no, what would happen?
I have no idea.
It doesn't go back to court. They don't have the power to send it back to court.
I think we'd have to go back to mediation. I don't know. I have no idea, honestly. But I look, 99.999% that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Knock on wood.
Well, but also, this is the same city council that approves all the other mediation things.
Right.
So, like, when they kill people and get 3 million, 5 million, whatever.
Yeah.
They rubber stamp that stuff.
Yeah. And this is also kind of related to as to why we didn't talk about the settlement publicly. It's because, you know, it's kind of like, well, this vote technically still has to happen and they do have the power to deny it, which will likely not happen. But,
right.
You know, journalists find things out. And so that's...
You know what? Because I want to publish this tomorrow.
Sure.
A speedy turnaround for me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to publish a different one today.
Sure.
So we're going to have a twofer.
Cool.
This week. City Council, if you're listening. Russia, if you're listening. If you veto this, I am advising Ben's attorneys to double the fine. To double the agreement. On you. This one's now on you. So now they get $600,000.
That'd be crazy.
Because you should have already rubber stamped it.
Yeah.
You should have already said through Twitter or whatever, right on First Amendment, take your money.
Yeah.
In fact, we're going to give Ben the key of the city for fighting this. Because the First Amendment really matters. Yes. It's what separates us from Russia.
Yeah, we can say it's the reason I'm sitting here with you and talking about things, right?
And who have we dissed? We've dissed the mayor, we've dissed the city attorney, all the cops, most of the city councils, even the liberals, quote-unquote liberals. We've dissed them all.
Yeah.
Because we're protected by the First Amendment.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, we can talk how crappy this country is all night, but part of the reason that it's good is because of that.
Mm-hmm. And someone who is currently elected wanted to take all of that away with one lawsuit.
Ben Camacho, thank you for your service. Are you working on any stories that you want to tell us about?
I just got a grant from the LA Press Club.
You did?
Yeah, to basically finish this investigation I've been working on for several years already.
Is this coming straight out of from Diana?
It's called the Charles Rapalai.
But who sent you the email?
David Krogan.
How about that?
Yeah. Yeah. So the board selected me and another reporter.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
I was on that board for 4 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
When they were over here, when their offices were over here.
Mm, okay.
They do great work.
Yeah. This is a new grant. I think it's a second or something. Like it was very early.
Shout out to Diana because she works tirelessly to protect journalists, to reward journalists, to appreciate journalists through all these awards. And a lot of the money that... So when you apply... When you have a piece that you want to have up for consideration,
mm-hmm.
you pay a little bit of money.
Yeah.
And she's a true nonprofit. So she kicks back some of that money for some of these grants is what it sounds like.
Interesting.
And so she's also the real deal.
Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, shout out to her. Yeah. Thank you for funding my investigation.
That is awesome.
This is like the third or fourth time that I applied to a grant for it and finally received one. So
you applied previously at
two different grants. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
what's the story?
It's a story about a police shooting from 2020.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say right now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm very happy for you.
Yeah.
Okay. So we need to go to knockla.org.
Yes.
We need to follow you on Camacho with a zero at the end.
Yes. At Ben Camacho zero.
Ben Camacho zero.
Yes.
Cerise, we need to follow her. I was kind of surprised when I followed Cerise on Instagram the other day. Because she went to a rave. Did you see this picture of her and her friends at the rave?
Probably.
It did not look like the badass Cerise that I know. It looked like three cute raver girls. She was showing both sides of her personality. It was very
she's
nice.
A real person.
I keep people in their boxes. And she blew out of that box. I was very happy to see that.
Maybe don't keep people in boxes, Tony.
I'm starting to learn that. Ben, I'm so happy that you beat everybody. And as somebody who benefits from the First Amendment, thank you for protecting it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that I beat everybody too. This has been an incredible journey, and I think, you know, I'll definitely be reflecting more on it as the days go on.
So. Right on. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you. Thank you.
How great was Ben? You know who we'd have some fried salad with? Our Patreons. When you stoke us, you're saying, Tony, sort of like, and when you revisit these previous guests, it's like getting a phone call from the person you sat next to on a long airplane ride, and they're just checking in to say hi. So shout out to our Patreons, Nancy Rommelman, Sean Atlow, Matt Mills, Sean Wallace, Greg and Molly, Jamie Taylor, Mark Johnson, Kira Ann, Barney Granke, Ben Welsh, Jen Adams, Trevor Wilson, Bree Wild, Dougie Gyro, Christina Up North, Robin Carey, Adam Shorn, Ben from Down Under, Chris from the ATX, Gregor, and Phil. To be a Patreon, go to patreon.com/hereinLA and give till it hurts. Want to support us, but your department just lost 300 racks for foolishly trying to restrict the First Amendment? You can still help. Post your favorite episode on your Facebook. Start with this one. Tweet this link on your Twitter or on your Threads. Put it in your live journal for all I care, but tell your friends. Tell them how Here in LA is spelled, and it's on Apple Podcasts and Google and even on the YouTubes. Here in LA is produced by myself, Tony Pierce. Music supervision by Jordan Katz. Songs by Orgone and Jordan Katz. Special thanks to Cindy for creating the logo, Jen for inspiring this, and brave reporters everywhere using the rights the founders bestowed upon us to keep public officials and public servants in check. Also, shout out to all the lawyers out there who work pro bono for cases just like this.
Thank you, Patriots.